It's with a very heavy heart that we gather this evening. Klal Yisrael has experienced an enormous loss with the patira of Harav Hagon Hagodol, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. It's only appropriate that we have Divrei Hesped, and we're fortunate to have Rabbi Cohn with us, who is a Talmud of Rav Lichtenstein, Rabbi Willig, who is a Talmud Chavra of Rav Lichtenstein, who can reflect with Divrei Hesorus and Divrei Hesped not merely on the loss, but what it is that we can do in terms of our Avodas Hashem. The Rambam, in two different places, emphasizes the mitzvah of Avas Hashem. And yet the Rambam, characteristically, explains it in very different ways. In Hilchos Yesodei HaTorah in Perek Beis, the Rambam writes, Heichi haderech lavasu lirasa. How does a person reach the level of Avas Hashem? And the Rambam writes that you take a step back, Kishi yizbonin Adam, and you look at what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has created. The Rambam cites the pasuk of Tzoma Nafshi Lelokim Lekel Chai, and immediately it elicits a certain sense of reverence and awe, Yiras HaRomamus, and Ava as well. And when you look in the Rambam in the beginning of Sefer HaMitzvos, the Rambam writes something which is very different. The way that you attain Avas Hashem is through Limud HaTorah and fulfillment of the mitzvah, Hashem. And therefore, the Rambam seems to present almost two different drachim of attainment of Avas Hashem, either through the broadest panorama of recognizing Gadlus HaBorei, or through the rigor of Limud HaTorah in Shmiras HaMitzvos. It's interesting, when you look in the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvos, the language that we have is the Talmud Torah and performance of mitzvos is the Ahava HaMechuyeves. That is the mandated, obligatory Avas Hashem. And the Rambam in Perek Yud Hilchos Chuva uses a very different term, and that is the Ahava HaRe'uya. It's an appropriate way to experience Avas Hashem. But no doubt, according to the Rambam, true Avas Hashem represents a fusion, a confluence of both of these domains. The rigor, the dedication in terms of Limud HaTorah and Dikduke Mitzvos, but also B'chol Drachei Hodayehu, to be able to recognize in the broadest sense Gadlus HaBorei. Is with this in mind, I would suggest that even Kabbalas HaMalchus Shamayim of Kriya Shema is preceded by two very different brachas. The bracha of Yotzer HaMa'oros that reflects the Rambam in Yara Chazaka, where one could attain Kabbalas HaMalchus Shamayim through understanding Yotzer Orov Horei Choshech, but yet the bracha Vava Rabba Lilmod Olamed Lishmor V'Laso Zulakayim, reflecting that theme of the Rambam in Minin HaMitzvos. And if you look in the Sefer HaChinuch and Avud Raham, even in the Pasuk of Kriyashma, they emphasize different phrases of the Pasuk of Shema Yisrael. If I were to ask you, what is the phrase of Kabbalas HaMalchus Shamayim? Avud Raham writes, it's Hashem Elokeinu. And the Sefer HaChinuch writes, it's the conclusion of the Pasuk of Hashem Echad. And perhaps that also reflects those two dimensions. Hashem Elokeinu uniquely is true regarding Knesset Yisrael. Lilmod Ulamei Lishmor Lasos Ulakayim. Hashem Echad, the harmony of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the achdus of everything that we have in this world, that is implicit in Yotzer HaMa'oros. The fact that, yes, all the splendor, the beauty, the radiance that we are zoche to is a function of nothing else than Hashkochas Hashem. I know of anyone else of our door who is such a master of the confluence, the fusion of these two domains. The commitment of Rav Lichtenstein to Limud HaTorah and Dikduke Mitzvos was something that was remarkable, remarkable. I learned with his son, Rav Yitzhak Lichtenstein, and simply the reflections that he would tell me b'charusa of what his father stood for was remarkable. Rav Lichtenstein, Rav Yitzhak Lichtenstein, roughly my age, he told me that he never once heard his father speak any sichaskul. Never once in his entire life. And when you think of such an individual who would never speak Sikha Sulin, you think of a person who is secluded and who was cloistered, who didn't interact with other people, and his interaction and his influence and his hashpa was universal and remarkable. To have such a broad net and such a broad reach and to be so revered and respected, and never to have a child hear you ever speak Sichas Chulin, is something which is remarkable. And the dimension that he added was that sense of an outstanding shiluv, that b'chol d'rachel do'ehu, there wasn't any aspect of Bria Shamayim V'aretz that couldn't be integrated in the sense of l'lmod u'lamed lishmor lasos u'lakayim. And that integration spec volumes in terms of what he represented. His integrity was impeccable, and his brilliance was matched by his anivos. You would never hear him in any shape or form exhibit anything other than amazing respect and amazing deference, even if someone were to disagree with what he felt was so near and dear to his heart. And that's a remarkable, remarkable combination. And it's something that no doubt that we glean when we think of the Rambam, that the Rambam tells us that typically speaking, a person should strive for the Derech HaMutza, for the golden mean, the Shvil Hazav, but not when it comes to Kas and not when it comes to Gaiva. You know, when you think of a person who modeled in that way, a Hashkafa of a Shvil Hazav, but yet in terms of Kas or Anava, an extremist, never angered. I remember that Rav Yitzchak Lichtenstein, he said he never saw his father angry in his entire life. And to be able to reflect in that way of no anger, no sichas chulin, and yet to demonstrate a sense of such avas Yisrael is an amazing, remarkable combination. We don't appreciate what we lost. And the hope is this evening in the Hespedim that Rabbi Cohn, Rabbi Ulug will be able to share such insight with us, to give us a glimpse, a glimmer into his godless, into the vacuum that now we face, and our responsibility to see to it that we not only persevere, but we grow in Avodas Hashem and follow that Hashpa. It's certainly a pleasure to call upon Rabbi Aaron Cohn, who called me last night to initiate the Hespedim this evening. It's an opportunity for me to thank him for so many of the initiatives that we work on together. As a Talmud, he will reflect on his exalted Rebbe, and then Bezras Hashem afterwards, Rebbe Willig will give ha'aros and reflections in Divrei Hesped as a colleague of Hagaon HaGaon Rav Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Livracha.
I have absolutely no pretensions of being roy in any way to speak about Rav Lichtenstein or to be able to capture his godless. Af al pichein, remaining silent and quiet is not an option. So if it's possible maybe to scratch even a little bit of the surface of what I saw for a few minutes, what I saw and experienced, I'd like to try to share that. The particular theme that Rav Lichtenstein would come back to often, which I believe, in a sense, was maybe the central motif in his life. He used to mention that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu first communicated with Adam, the Pasuk says, Vayitzav Hashem Elokim al Ha'adam Lemor. And Rav Lichtenstein would constantly emphasize that a person has to see oneself as a metzuveh, a constant, ongoing sense of connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, subservience to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and constantly trying to discern and to understand what does Hashem want from me at this particular moment. Rav Lichtenstein was, in a sense, the quintessential metzuveh va'oseh. And borrowing that phrase from Chazal, what I mean is that what he did was always with this sense like he was being metzuveh. You always had a sense that he was engaged and he was involved and he was doing things because he felt this is what he had to do at this particular time. There was always, in everything he did, a sense of mission and purpose. There was no downtime. There was never a time that you would see that he was taking off a little bit of time just to relax or to take a break. Everything that he did seemed to have some purpose and seemed to be done with a sense of intensity, with a sense of energy. See, walking from one place to another. It was always, always with a sense that there's a place to go, there's something else to do, and that sense of constant connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and constant response to Tzivui Hashem was something which shaped and characterized everything that he did. I'm not ready to talk about his godless in Torah, but nonetheless, to mention for those who may not have seen, may not have known, the Asmada was absolutely incredible. Everybody in the yeshiva knew that when Rav Lichtenstein often was traveling to the yeshiva and he would give somebody a lift, he was involved in preparing shir in the midst of driving. And you would see him involved and engaged at the same time because he was able to literally multitask, keep his eye on the road, and at the same time see that he was preparing intensely sugyas and gemara that were exceptionally complicated. Everybody knew that you asked him about literally any sugya anywhere, and that would include all of Shas, the most complicated sections in Gemara. And there was a sense that everything had been worked out bi'iyun, that there was a sense of understanding where everything fit. In everything, in Torah. You couldn't ask about anything that he couldn't respond to, not only in an educated kind of way, but with a sense of depth and mastery. I personally had the experience one time, and it's only an anecdote, of approaching Rav Lichtenstein and just asking him about a particular phrase in the Rambam. I went to the front of the Beis Medrash. He picked up his Rambam, a two-volume Rambam. He thought for a minute, and he opened up. I remember one of the places was Hilchos Sanhedrin. And he says, the phrase appears here. And he thought a little bit more, and he turned to a place, completely different place in the Rambam. And the phrase appears here. And then he thought a little bit more, and he turned to a third place in the Rambam, three completely different places, and the phrase appears here. I walked away with a sense of, this is what refers to the Pasuk in Mishlei, Kosvei Maluach Libecho. It was as if the Torah was mamish written into him. The sense of connection to what he referred to constantly as Dvar Hashem, and he would say it with such a sense of awe and trepidation. That sense was, he was connected so strongly, so tightly to Torah. It was like part of him. But if one would focus only upon the element of Talmud Torah, that would be constricting Rav Lichtenstein. I'll give you an anecdote again. One time I heard that he asked a boy, I think, who was looking to come to the yeshiva, as to what he was looking to accomplish. And the boy gave a very solid answer that he was looking to come and to learn and to grow in terms of his Avonav Torah, in terms of his Bekiyas and Be'iyun and everything. Rav Lichtenstein said to him, he said, well, that's not really a full description as to why you'd be coming to the yeshiva. You're coming to develop really as an Ever Hashem with all its components. And that was really something that you saw on an ongoing basis, day to day, minute to minute, in regard to Rav Lichtenstein, that sense of mitzuveh ve'oseh, a constant sense of avdus to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a constant sense of subserviating oneself to Ratzon Hashem, all the time in everything that one does. And again, always feeling that sense of mission, and what else do I have to do at this particular point in time? One example of this, for those who would observe Rav Lichtenstein carefully, and I tried to, there's a whole section in Halacha about how you prepare for tefillah. And there are details about what exactly you're supposed to do, and the Shulchan Aruch describes, and it used to be once upon a time you had special clothing that they sometimes had a minute to put on special clothing for davening, because it's immediately Lifnei HaMelech. Especially when we get to Shemoneh Esrei, you're standing before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and all the halachos relating to the beginning of Shemoneh Esrei, the end of Shemoneh Esrei, everything revolves around this theme, Amido Lifnei HaMelech. Day after day, every single time, before Shmon Esrei. It was a wonder to see, because you saw all of a sudden the sense of awe descend upon Rav Lichtenstein, a sense of aim on. And then he always, without fail, would straighten his jacket. He would button it. He took off his yarmulke from underneath his hat and put it neatly into his pocket, and everything had to be straightened out. And you saw this happen time and again, and you could see it wasn't happening by rote. He was about to engage in speaking and communicating with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That sense of connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that sense of an Eved HaMedaber Bifnei Rabo, before the Ribono Shel Olam, was something which was discernible and clear and tangible every single time he davened. And it was discernible and noticeable, you might say, in everything that he did. Now, Rav Lichtenstein used to eat lunch in the Chadar Ochel, in the cafeteria, in the lunchroom. And at times, it wasn't difficult just to look up and to watch him eating lunch. And I don't think I'm imposing at all my own preconception upon what I saw. Rav Lichtenstein ate quickly and almost, you would say, with a sense of purpose. He finished eating, immediately went, and he would wash my machronim bedafka with a coats. He went over to do Netilas Yadayim, walked back, benched, and off he went. There was this whole sense that there was not a second, a minute, a split second that one could waste. And as the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch talk about in regard to a person who's constantly engaged in Avodas Hashem, even when it comes to the mundane and the physical aspects of life, this was what one saw on a constant, ongoing basis. There was no such thing as downtime. There was no such thing as a break. There was no such thing as taking off in any which way. Yerushalayim was sometimes astonishing. When you would ask Rav Lichtenstein about anything, so the answer was always a multifaceted one. And when you ask him something practical, like what should I do, what was incredible was the sense of achrayus in making sure to weigh every single consideration, every single halacha, every single perspective, ben adam l'chaveiro, ben adam l'makom, and then making sure to do what was correct, and not leaving anything out, not in Maaseh, and not in Avodah Shebelev. Which was something that Rav Lichtenstein would always emphasize. And I'll give you an example in regard to this, in which the emphasis on making sure not to sacrifice or to give up or to in any way compromise in any element of one's Avodah Hashem was always discernible. It was one time, an anecdote. I was asking him about the halacha in regard to what's called chadash or yashan, and asking him what he thought about when to be mekil, when to be machmir. And he told me that it was well known that he personally was machmir in regard to this, even in chutz laretz. And he said, you know, recently, he said, Rav Yitzchak Cohen had made a bar mitzvah in the yeshiva. And he was in America, so he went to the bar mitzvah. And he said that turned out that what was there, he wasn't sure that it was actually yashan he could eat there. And he expressed such agmas nefesh and anguish. He says the man is such a tzaddik. And he spoke for a couple of minutes about the tzidkus of Rabbi Yitzchak Cohen. And then he spoke about the Rebbetzin. He says, do you know who the Rebbetzin is? And he says, for me not to eat at the Kiddush, at their son's bar mitzvah, I felt terrible, he said. It's a gadol b'torah. I felt terrible. But he said, but what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do? That according to certain Rishonim, it could be also min haTorah. I can't. And ultimately he didn't, and he explained exactly what he did. But there's a sense of someone who couldn't let go of any element, bein odom l'moko, meidom l'chaveiro. There was a struggle that had to take place. And afterwards, it wasn't as if he just dismissed it and said, well, okay, so, you know, no. So I might. there was such a concern that in some way he might have slighted someone who would see Rav Lichtenstein certainly as a Rebbe of his. He might have slighted him in some way, and that caused him on an ongoing basis real, intense, agmas nefesh, real anguish. That was Yerushalayim. There's no element in Avodas Hashem that's subject to any element of compromise. Not in terms of what you do, not in terms of what you think, and not in terms of what you feel. There's one time in the midst of Shir. And imagine for a minute, the Shir had about 50 young men in it, midst of the Gemara Shir. Rav Lichtenstein suddenly, without any warning whatsoever, basically mid-sentence, mid-word, mid-syllable, turned to the side, started coughing, spitting on the floor, gagging. All of a sudden, without any warning whatsoever, just see him in the middle of Shir, he's talking, he's mid-sentence, explaining whether a Rambam, a Tosfos, whatever the case might be. In the middle, all of a sudden, the Shir, he starts spitting, gagging, but with an intensity also. And then he picked up his head, and he said, "Oh, as Lefi Tosfos." And he then looked up and saw 50 young men staring at him with a sense of astonishment, like, what happened to Rav Lichtenstein? He's in the middle of Shir. He's like, what did he just do? So he said quickly, Zuv nichnas lapet. Lav it. And you could see, you had to be there to understand this. A fly, an Israeli fly, had flown into his mouth as he was talking. And what he said without preparation was his immediate gut instinct and reaction. Lavin! Lavin! There's lavin in my mouth! Most people, a fly is near you, a fly flies into your mouth. There's a lot of other things you think about, but you know, lavin, not everybody thinks the right way. And then he went right back to Shir. The sense of not having any hesech hadas, a person who's constantly a mitzuvev ose, without any break whatsoever, was so tangible, was so clear. You could see this at any moment, any time you looked at him, no matter what he was doing effectively. You saw a person who was learning, who was davening, but always with a sense of mission and purpose. What does HaKadosh Baruch Hu want from me at this particular moment? His godless in Torah was astonishing, but his godless in every area, because there wasn't anything that he could compromise in regard to. That really was what was most impressive, the sense of what you would call shlemus. There's no such thing as any area of life, any area of avoda ben odom, l'makom ben odom l'chaver, that it's possible to compromise in regard to. Shbi zoche to be able to take example of this tremendous gadol and to do whatever we can in order that it should inspire us in our avodas Hashem as well.
Two weeks ago, Chol HaMoed Pesach, our yeshiva publicized a number of hespedim which were said 22 years ago, when the Rav of Soloveitchik, Zichrono Livracha, passed away, a number of them said that the Rav was so multifaceted, so outstanding, that the only one who could have set a proper hesped on the Rav was the Rav himself. What was true of the father-in-law, I believe, is true of Moav Rabbi, Rav Aaron Zatzal, as well. Whoever heard him understood that he, like his father-in-law, had not only a unique genius, radiance, breadth, depth, but also a unique style. And therefore, with this sense of inadequacy on all of these levels, I appear before you this evening, not chalila to be misatzel be'espedo shel chacham, by which Chazal were extraordinarily critical. But at the same time, one has to realize that whatever is being said here is a very small, small fraction of what could and really should be said. Rav Aaron was nifter b'shchodesh Iyar. In the Sfira, look on every sitter, Gevura Sheber Tiferes. Let me begin by trying to explain to you what that means and how it applied so incredibly to this Goyin, to this Tzaddik, to this Chosid. Tiferes, the Mefarshim explain, splendor, glory, reflects a combination of various themes. In the words of the Svarim, you have Chesed, you have Gvura, put them together somehow, and it yields Tiferes. It's not monochromatic, it's not extreme. Rather, it's a very beautiful combination of different hues and colors. In life, individuals who have applied themselves to more than one specific area find their attention, their concentration, their focus somewhat diluted. It is only to be expected. If someone is focused on a single-minded goal, every single dimension of the personality is focused in one direction, we understand. We're going to summon up a great deal of strength of Gevura in that particular direction. But, as all Mechanchim know, if one's focus is varied and broad and encompasses different aspects, it's almost inevitable that the same level of Gevura cannot be achieved on all the various fronts. What I saw in my Rebbe, Rav Aaron, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, was Gvura Sheba Tiferes. That he was a man of Tiferes was obvious. Anyone who heard him speak, who read his magnificent writings, saw what a multicolored personality he possessed, how his interests was as broad as could be imagined, his idiom peppered with citations from high literature. And yes, he spent 3 years in Harvard earning a doctorate in literature with Gvura. One of the most easy degrees you get nowadays. He threw himself into it, and that legacy remained with him for a lifetime. Yet, when I knew him, after he was already rabbi doctor, in terms of the time we saw him spending on the Gemara, he was, I can say this without any hesitation, the biggest masman in the yeshiva when I knew him. And as the Rambam writes so famously, the obligation of asmad is incumbent on many different people. You're supposed to learn if you are poor, if you are rich, if you are well, if you are sick. And the very last one is afilu balisha obanim. And Rav Aaron, when I knew him, was a balisha obanim, had little children growing up. And nonetheless, he was a bigger master than any of the bochum in the yeshiva. We had no other responsibilities, no other obligations. He surpassed us all. I remember that the way it worked in the yeshiva then, and there's some faces of some contemporaries, the shiurim would end at 2:45. And then they'd daven mincha, and the classes would start at 3:00. But the kollel, of which he was the head when I was there, I was privileged to be in the kollel for the last 3 years of his tenure, from 1968 to 71. The kollel davened at 2:30. Why that is, I'm not going to the history. But he was in a pickle, because he finished at 2:45, all his talmidim were davening mincha, but he didn't want to be late to the kollel. So what he would do is, he would come every day, this happened every day, at 2:45 at the end of the shiur, not early. He'd come running down the hall, running, with his famous Gemaras and Rambams that he always carried. 4-volume Gemara, 2-volume Rambam, running, zooming, taking a seat in the back of the Beis Medrash. That's where he sat in the Beis Medrash in first hall and the third floor. That was the Kol Beis Medrash all those years. In the back, next to the back by the door, so he could see everybody. He'd be in his seat. We were davening mincha, we said aleinu. We had a little schmooze for a second, and he was already sitting in his seat. And then he hadn't had mincha yet. So he'd somehow try to find, it wasn't like today when they have Y.U. Zmanim now. This is long before those times. You have to go find a pickup minion here. Even Dan Bichina sometimes. Because he didn't want to miss 1 minute of the kolos. He was an example for all of us. And he never left. He would sit there the whole time, immersed. So immersed that yes, people were afraid to go over to him. Not because he would in any way talk crossly. That would never happen. But they saw how deeply he was involved in his learning. They didn't want to disturb him. Gvura Sheba Tiferes. Incredible Gvura, incredible strength in whatever he did. His godliness is not so well known in this country because of his decision in 1971 to leave everything behind. He was a magid shir of the first rank in our yeshiva to join a fairly new enterprise, Shivat Har Etzion. I visited the yeshiva in 1973, 2 short years after he left. There's a long story about that visit for another time. And I saw the yeshiva was just in its infancy. Teeny little base medrash, a few houses in Alon Shavut. Came back the next year for the summer as well. It was his oldest son's bar mitzvah. Remember the dancing and the singing. And he became more and more involved in Israeli society, and somewhat removed from Americans' one. He would often defer when asked questions about what to do in this country and say, ask the Rabbanim in America. Even my name got thrown around sometimes. He's asking people to ask me. It's like a little crazy, but that was his anivus, which was spoken earlier. And Hashkacha, this particular year, I happened to be at the dinner of his yeshiva, Har Etzion. He was certainly unable to come. Two of his children were there and spoke. And they gave out a volume of tradition, which is the special issue of the periodical of the Rabbinical Council of America, devoted entirely to Rav Aharon, completely. Written by a whole series of his Talmidim, but all kinds of aspects of his personality. And I was at the dinner, they gave it out there, and I saw a logo on the Gush stationery in English, which called for immersion in Torah and engagement with the world. Did Rabban compose that? Wouldn't surprise me. But that was him. There was total immersion in Torah. Total, absolute. But it did not come at the expense of engaging the rest of the world. Wherever it may happen to be, whether in America, the various issues that beset us when we were his Talmidim. We read an article there by Rabbi Hillel Goldberg of Denver. Fascinating. And later on, much more complicated issues in Eretz Yisrael, and he did not run away from any of them. He had what to say. He always had respect for other opinions. It was to a fault. Talmidim with kibbutz. On the one hand, and on the other hand, there were always two hands. It was almost nothing that there was just one hand. Just read in Pirkei Avos, Hevemi Talmido Shel Aaron, Oev Shalom, Verodev Shalom, which he always did. They had a focus on the second part, Oev Es HaBrios U'Makarvan LaTorah. The word Brios is very instructive, it means creatures. If you look in the Mishnayos, you'll find inside of a regular Mishnayos, Yochanan Boaz, you'll see that there were those who interpret the word Brios, creatures, in the broadest possible sense, including Nochrim, not members of Am Yisrael. Rab Aaron was an Oev Es HaBrios. You read there about how it bothered him then that there were people starving in Biafra, named the people they never even heard of, somewhere in Africa. But many of the Pechovshi Abbas and Medrash weren't so concerned about it. Of course, we all had some concern, but not Rab Aaron's. He was an Oev Es HaBrios throughout the world. It came to Eretz Yisrael, it became more difficult. Because how do you deal with a nation comprised of individuals, many of whom are bent on our destruction? How do you deal with it? Rav Aharon had his very powerful disagreements with other members of the, we'll call the religious Zionist community on this very point. Some of the debates have been publicized and recorded for all to see. Mekarvan LaTorah, his reach was great. He did what he felt would bring Torah to the maximum possible audience. He even sat for hours of interviews with Rav Sabato. A remarkable, remarkable work, Mevakshei Panech, emerged, which was published, I believe, by Yediot Achronot, a secular newspaper. Rabbi knew it. He wanted the Morah Shebetorah to reach everyone. Here the word brios would refer to, look on the start of the Mishnayos, individuals who are not learned, not even observant, and you're not even going to get them to go all the way to the Beis Medrash of Gush. Mekarv on the Torah, a little bit closer. This is an enterprise that many took no part in, but not Rav Aharon. His Avas HaBrios, as was mentioned this morning in our Beis Medrash, preceded the Mekarv on the Torah, as it's supposed to be, enabled him to achieve the Mekarv on the Torah. However, I think this must be said, I haven't heard this said by any of the Hispanim that I was at. People think, on the one hand, on the other hand, on the one hand, on the other hand, Rav Aharon was somehow a paraviyid. Chas v'sholem, chalila v'chas. He was fire. But he knew how to balance the fire. But when there was no balance, you saw the fire come out. I'll give only three examples. And the three examples refer to the cardinal sins, as so they should. Shvichas damim. Remember Rav Aharon speaking after the story of Baruch Goldstein, where some rabbis tried to justify what he did, and Rav Aharon came out fired. No two sides anymore. There were no two sides. He wouldn't take any rationalization and any explanation. No. Screaming, yelling. I was once with him at a meeting known as the Orthodox Forum. There's a particular individual, Frum, who said certain things, certain philosophies, which many of us were somewhat uncomfortable with. And this individual was trying to somehow adduce Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, as well known as a very moderate and broad figure, as being endorsing these views. And Rabbi Aharon got up and screamed. If Rabbi Shlomo Zalman was to hear this, he would rice kriya. And those who know, just recently, when he was confronted with a difficult issue of abuse, sexual abuse, he didn't sit on his hands, he joined a group, stuck his neck out, got clobbered by individuals who can't come to his ankles. Because he saw, this is an avla. As is mentioned, the Avastar Rav Nosson, on that very Mishnah, first parak of Avas, comments, quoting a pasuk we, many of us know, you know, Rabbi Aharon knew Tanakh backwards. Backwards and forwards through Tanakh. I'm not talking Chamish Chum Shetorah. Tanakh, Neviim and Ksuvim, which most of us yeshiva guys, you know, halavai we should know Chumash and Rashi. He knew it inside and out. And of course, Haftorah is nothing to say. I mean, he can get up and read any Haftorah from a klaf cold. This often happened in our yeshiva. All those days we daven, and you know, no one was prepared. He'd shake it out as if he had just prepared it for a few hours. It's incredible. We couldn't believe what we were seeing. But the pasuk that is referred to, Toras Emes Hoysa Befiyu, Malachi Perik Beis, certainly true of Rav Aharon. The Avla Lo Nimtza Bisfasov, Bisholam of Mishor Holach Iti of Rabbi Meshim Meyavon. My understanding of this pasuk is that if there was an Avla, not only was it not Nimtza Bisfasov, he wouldn't say an Avla. He couldn't tolerate an avla. He could tolerate a lack of observance. Not that he in any way condoned it, chas v'shalom. He can tolerate even laziness in learning, which of course he would never condone either. He can many things he can tolerate, not an avla. An avla, something unethical, something going against the fundamentals, avodah zarah, girash v'chazdamim. No. There were no two sides. It's important that people should recognize this. And yes, the very next pasuk says, Kisif se kohen yishbu das, v'sori of action v'piyu, ki malach Hashem tzvokos hu. And the Haflor writes in his introduction, based on the words of Chazal in this pasuk, im doma harav l'malach Hashem tzvokos yivakshu torah v'piyu, otherwise not. Rabban was also saw him davin, a malach Hashem tzvokos. But more the Haflor says, a human being is called a mahalach, and a malach is called an omed. An omed means someone who is willing to stop his ascent on the ladder of Torah knowledge and depth and breadth and scope to stop to help another, to help a Talmud. Such a Rebbe, Yivakshu Torah Mipiyu. The Rebbe is so wrapped up in his personal ladder of growth that he's not going to take time out to help a Talmud. Al Yivakshu Torah Mipiyu. I remember when I was a Talmud in the Kollel. Those 3 years, Rabbi Aaron would say a chabura himself once a week for over an hour, and this we learned his derech. But he insisted the other time once a week that a Talmud say a chabura. And he'd go from chabura to chabura. Some are on the higher level, would say to the whole group. Some would say only to a part of the group. He knew there were different levels. He would go everywhere. And he'd take notes. And he'd criticize. I am a tremendous debt of Rabbi Aaron because he used to come to my chaburas and criticize me. Say it this way, don't say it that way. It took time. And even they will call the not so strong Talmidim at the time, he went to their chaburas too and gave them tips because they too can serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the best of their maximum ability, of their ability. We say in a siyum, Onu Ratzim Vehem Ratzim. We mean it figuratively. But Rabbi Aaron was literal. Ratzim. He was always running. I can tell you why. The Gemara says, La'olim yorot adam l'dvar mitzvah. When I was running for a dvar mitzvah. He was always running to a dvar mitzvah. Whatever he was running, he was always to a dvar mitzvah. He ran. Literally ran. It's hard to keep up with him. I remember his davening. He shuckled away. I was like, wow. He's tall and healthy, you know, shuckling like crazy. I remember in particular his davening, Leil Rosh Hashanah. The Rav would give these masterful drushes about Koronatzia Nacht. So we heard the drusha, very nice. But Rav Aaron heard the drusha, and that's what I remember. We davened in those days in the basement of the Morgenstern dormitory, and we would daven pretty long shmeres ourselves. And after that was the David Mizmer, and after that everyone went online to say Good Yontif and Shana Tova, Dikosta them. And after all that's over, he's still down in Shemayim. I couldn't wait. My wife was waiting for me. I didn't know how long it was going to be. Still don't know how long. I don't know. I don't know how long it went. And shuffling like there's no tomorrow. This was what we saw. His benanam lechavero. We say not shaykh. I can't even begin to describe it. We heard a little bit from Rav Cohen Shlita, a little bit. Didn't want to hurt anyone's feelings. Even though he was very exacting with himself, he was so tolerant of others. Again, except for an avla. An avla, that's part of the Benadam Chaver, is to respond strongly to an avla. If you don't, that's also a lack of Benadam Chaver. His Yiras Shamayim, Dikdik B'mitzvot, as we heard, left an impress on everybody who observed him. How should I say it? Rabbi Aaron lived in an ideal world. He was an idealist, and he lived in an ideal world. And it's unfortunate. I have to say it because I have to say it. that not everyone who picked up Rav Aaron's Derech Alimud, which is so enchanting and so awe-inspiring, not everyone picked up the rest. It bothered him. You know it bothered Rav Aaron. People who know it only for the intellectual prowess. It bothered the Rav too. The Rav spoke about it openly. I don't know if I heard it. Rav Aaron was, I think, a little bit more circumspect. They didn't all learn his Yerushalayim. Didn't all learn the Davin like he did. Didn't all learn his Chassidus. This is the Fnim Yeshua Sadin. When I heard yesterday morning, Rabbi Aaron's Batira, just before Shachar, someone came to me, I just heard about it early in the morning. And we're davening, Shrish Chodesh, and I cut to the Pasuk. I couldn't contain myself. Yokar Be'ene Hashem Amov Salah Chassidov. Such a chassid. Such an individual who was lifnim Yeshua Sadin in every aspect of his life. Everyone in his learning, in his davening, ben ol levok, ben ol chaver, every single aspect of his life was a chosid, lifnim Yeshua Sadin. He passed away on Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh is a time which represents, in a certain sense, darkness. The levana disappears. In some way, a patira parallels that. But we know that just as the levana disappears only to reappear with greater and greater light, so too our holy Rebbe who left us for those who observed carefully, he began leaving us over this past year. I saw him last in Chodesh Elul. I went to visit in the yeshiva and spoke to him a bit. He told me, I'm learning Baba Kama. That's what he told me. Kind of remember. After that, began to leave us. Ani ma'amin be'emunah shleima. He was an isha emunah. That if our great Rebbe has left us in this world on Rosh Chodesh, a day of darkness when the moon disappears, it is only because he's now going to a lichtach Gan Eden. To Gan Eden, of tremendous light, of tremendous sanctity, where he'll be greeted in Yeshiva Shomala, as one of the greats of our generation in Torah, in mitzvos, in chesed, in emunah. Each and every one of us takes something of this great light that is now shining in a better world. And take from that great light and shine it on ourselves and on others in this world. Tehei nishmasa tzeruah b'tzorah chayim.